Accession number 2008, reel 13.
Dennis Wairo, reel 13.
Now, the Chinese, they come along, and of course they could get off the hills close enough to you to put a sticky bomb. They had sticky bombs and stick them, and they used to on the track guards, you know, I forget the name of them now. Anyway, they stuck one on one tank. I don't know whether it was the first day or the second day, and the tank behind spotted them and let off a 20-pound shell, you know, HE. Of course, blew into the kingdom come, and the little old hut, that there was kind of a hut thing beside the road, and blew that to bits as well. But the crew commander, I forget his name now, was an officer, and he said that the bomb going off didn't cause much trouble, but the 20-pound, when that went off, it made a hell of a dent. So that was that.
When you were retreating down the valley, did you use your Mills bombs and your pistol at
all? No, I didn't. I got them on me. I don't know why. They're all stacked by me. The Mills bombs were all stacked by me, being the operator at the time. And I thought, well, I'm going to load myself up with them. A .38 revolver ain't no good to anybody, only to shoot yourself. That's what went through my mind. But what I was going to do was immaterial, because when I come up and saw all the infantry blokes on the top of the tank, and there was nothing more I could do, really.
And you passed some POWs at the burning roadblock. Did you recognise any of the POWs when you drove through?
The only one I recognised, I think, was the MR.
Was that Dr. Padgett?
Yeah, I believe he had a pink cap. That's why I'd recognise him. I don't know whether he had a pink cap. I wouldn't say that. But somehow or the other, I recognised it. Well, we was all kind of quizzed on this at the time, and we all said what we went on, what we thought had happened, and what we saw. And most of it come out true, really, in the end.
How many men had you lost?
We'd lost Bill Holwood and his crew. That was four. Three of them were captured and one was killed. His driver was killed. I don't know how many we'd lost further down, because when we went up 6 weeks later, well, that's jumping the gun, really. We got into this main MSR, lifted up our engine flaps. And we found out that we'd took a chunk out of the exhaust manifold, which had burnt through the fan belt, and the exhaust manifold is only about that much off the petrol tanks.
About a foot?
About a foot. The corner of the exhaust manifold. And we'd been running that on the way out, backfiring all the way, till we got there. So when we got there, the tanks weren't allowed on the main MSR, because they were clearing the troops and that down there. So we had to make a river bed, followed the main MSR down towards Yijiumbu. And we had to get down there as far as we could with the tank. So then we had to have one towing, one behind steering all the way down there. And to get out, we had to unshackle the tow ropes and drive the tank up, whether it was blowing or not, and get onto the road and proceed on. By the time we got there, to the end of that, we didn't go many hundred yards. We were so tanked out, we pulled up off the road and went to sleep for the night. That's the first night's sleep we'd had. And that was nice and calm in the morning. And I said, well, blokes, we'll have a good breakfast, wash, and get washed in that so we feel better, and then we'll move off. We won't hurry, we take our time. So I walking back up the road at the main MSR, I saw some Yankees there. There's a Yankee officer there, and I thought, well, I will find out what's happening. And I walked up there and I said to him, how things are going, where are the Chinese now? He said, you can see that tree over there. He said, just beyond that tree, my men are in contact with them. So that didn't look too good to me. That wasn't about 200 or 300 yards from where we'd spent the night. So we cancelled all breakfast, washing, and taking it easy, and hitched up and went on our way. We never stopped till we got across the Han River then. Of course, when we got to the Han River, we had to unshackle again and drive across the pontoon bridge. You see, we couldn't take three tanks, 150 ton altogether. So we had to drive across again with just backfire until we got to the other side. When we got back to the main MSR, my crew commander, which was Lieutenant Hurst, he got told to go back and make room for the lager for us at Yong Gun Po. So he went off and I was in charge. And that's how we got back to the Han River, and we got across the Han River into Yong Dong Po, and we didn't do much that day, and I went to sleep that night, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody woke me up and shook me up and said, here, drink this. And who was it but Mr. Hurst with a bottle of Guinness? Where he got it from? I don't know. And he said, you're all right. He said, here, I'll drink this. So God, that was like drinking whiskey. It kind of went down, took a lining off your stomach, because we had that much really that time. And anyway, that's where we was reunited again, and then it was about 2 days later, and emptied the tank out completely of ammunition and everything, and then they were going to tow it off. We were going to tow it out to Incheon, to backload it to Japan, and we got all the ammunition and everything out, Mills bombs, and you know, disarmed them and put them in the boxes and whatnot. And then they come to the phosphorus grenades for smoke outside. And I thought, well, I've got to, we've got to defuse them. So I put the pins in, lift them up, put the pins in, because we always had the pins, and started to turn the thing, to undo it. And I heard the fuse go. Heard the fuse go. I flung out a blinking mile away from it. Of course, they deteriorated, been in there all the winter, I suppose. And that it just exploded harmlessly, but the phosphorus went all over the place. So I thought, well, what the hell am I going to do with the rest of these? I ain't going to defuse him. And there was an old factory there with a big hole. I reckon it was a well. I think the best place for them is down the bottom. Well, no, I put them in, put all the rest of them down the well. That's it. I was too scared to do any more. I could, as soon as I moved, I felt, you know, I heard the fuse go and you jumped there. I don't want to get burnt by frost. Of course, they used to go off in the winter, you know. They used to leak. They were only made of tin. Now, you think of this, smoke grenades in the tanks were only made of tin. Well, you think of the cold, and then they warm up again, and of course they start to leak. And you'd be going along a track, and suddenly somebody would traverse his turret right and fire the whole lot off, because the phosphorus was leaking out. As soon as that touched the air, that was burning. That was another thing about them. That was a failure, that they weren't good enough, really. They should have been made of something seamless. Or now, they could have been made of plastic, couldn't they? That'd be far better than tin, like they were making, more like a soup can, really. But that was the only failure on the Centurion tanks that what were out there. You couldn't fault the guns or anything. You couldn't fault the engine. And the only other fault I think I had to find was the Morris 8 engine was cooled by the same radiators as the Meteor engine, the Rolls Meteor. And of course, being out in an excessively cold country, the head gaskets used to shrink. The head used to expand with the heat and cool down so much with the cold that they used to blow the gaskets on them. Not on the main engines, only on the Morris 8. That's the only other thing I found, really. Well, getting back to that, we got to Inch On. It was about 2 or 3 days after. I had to go out and take this blinking tank to Inch On with 3 of us again. And we come to one of these Yankee trestle bridges, which was about 100 yards or more long. And that was a way down. I thought, how the hell are we going to get over there? We can't drive the damn thing. So that was a 70-ton bridge, so we thought we'd test it out, and we took the 3 of them off. 150 tons. If the Yanks had seen us, mate, they'd had a fit, and the old bridge was gone like this. And I thought, Christ, ain't no good bailing out if it does go. But they did. That was a wooden bridge, and if it had been anything else, I think it had collapsed. But this wooden bridge took it. I got to admire their trestle bridge. That was right up. That took 150 ton. We got across there, and we went into the dock area where they were collecting these things and dumped it. And then we all had to come back, and we come back. That night, I think we spent an A squadron that was somewhere on the Inch On Peninsula way near Sword. And then we come back and joined the squadron the next day. Now, I think we was in the Marrick Quarters on Inch On Airfield, which were American built. It was in there, of course they'd been looted right wrecks place, but they had roofs over, so we was in there. That's where me and Hersey wrote to all the relatives of the the blacks what they're missing, and we thought, we'd, you know, well, they were missing then at the moment. And then about 6 weeks later, in between that time, oh, they had a big parade. We had a big parade on the Agricultural Institute, it was, in on the Incheon Peninsula. A big parade, and we all had to go who were up there. Anybody who was on this parade, and they read out the presidential citation to the the old general come up, you know, the Yanks, and to the Gloucesters and the artillery mortar regiment, what was with them, which was a load of bullshit, really.
Why was that?
Well, when you see what I saw coming out there, and what the Gloucesters went through, I don't belittle anything that Gloucesters went through, but when you see what the Northumberland Fusiliers and Ulster Rifles went through, they were every bit as brave as. That brings tears to your eyes to think about it. Anyway, but going from that, we went about, I suppose it would be about 6 weeks later, when we was all asked to volunteer to go back and dig up our blokes, you know, research the area, so.
Had the United Nations forces advanced forward again?
Yeah, advanced again, and they'd taken, whatever the Chinese had taken, and we were back over the river again. So we went back up, and as you see by the photographs, the state of the place. Of course, I immediately went to Bill Holden's tank, because he was a sergeant, and I hadn't known him long, but I knew his sister worked in the food office in Chelmsford. That's the only thing I knew about him. He said his sister worked in the food office, and his parents lived in Chelmsford, and his grandmother, where they were born, and that was over at West Stanleyfield. Well, that's only couple of miles across the field from me. Of course, we got kind of pally. Well, I was pally with all of them. But I went back there, and we searched round, and we found a grave. We found where they'd just been put chucks of earth over there. When we dug the bodies out, of course, they were covered in maggots and flies, and the stench was terrible. Anyway, we found in this bit near his tank an Ulster rifleman and his driver. Well, I knew his driver, and we put him out. He's still got his American, jacket like Parker, the lining of a Parker. He'd got that worked on him, and he got his sheath knife on him, and knew it. You know, I can't remember his name now. Anyway, we got him out and got the bodies out and parted them up, and we took them to the side of the track where they'd mostly hold, where the MO and that had been. We took them all up there, and there was a flat bit of ground, and they laid the body bags down there. And then we laid everything, got the bodies, laid them all out on the body bags, put them in there. All the contents of the dog tags, if they got them, and all anything what what you know, it's appertaining to identify them. We all put aside, and we around this area where you say the MO and that was, there was the Chinese had buried quite a few there, and just in a ditch, just up the side of it, was an hamlet. And all the bodies inside it with tourniquets on and splints on and God knows what. We had empty all that. We laid them all out. And then we come to one kind of mass grave. And we'd been at it quite a while, and some officer come up there from the infantry, I think it was the Ulster Rifles, and apparently they were looking for some officer, I suppose. I quite sympathised with him afterwards, but at the time, and he said the wrong thing to us. Oh, the bloody killed him. We'd be digging up these blokes, and I said, well, there's one here, you know. And he said, he's only an infantryman, he said. You better bugger off, mate. I swore at him. I don't very often swear, you know, really. But it did that, mate. Bloody mad, that did. Because what I've seen the blokes do in the previous 3 days was, I admired them. I was safe. I was fairly well safe in a bloody tank, wasn't I? But the infantry blokes, yeah, you got to admire them. And, when we got that over anyway, they were all shipped back to Pusanob, I suppose, where the graves are, where they are all buried at Pusan.
How many of your own units had you found?
Well, I don't know how many they found. There was quite a few, but really relatively small. We only had, there was only three tanks on the last day, and one of them had to go out of action because they'd fumes or something. He went back and got out. The one what was nearest the end, he got out before it all really got to boiling point. And then there was only me and Bill up there, I knew. But there was various other troops further down where the roadblock was, Sergeant Ricky's tank and one or two more. I don't know what happened to them, really. I couldn't say. Bill Holwood and Babe Bloke, don't you?
When you returned back, were all the tanks and carriers still in erect position when you returned to the area?
Yeah, oh yeah, they were all wrecked except Pearl's tank. We disposed of most of them, you see, before we come out. But Bill's tank was nose down. He was the last and nobody to do it. It's no, the Yankee Air Force reckoned they were going to take it out with their thing, and they reckoned they'd taken it out, and they never even touched it.
Had the Chinese not tried to remove the tank?
They'd removed all the ammunition. They'd cut all the canvas over the where the gun comes out over there. I can't remember the name now. They'd took everything they could take out of it, but they hadn't moved it. And when they dug that barrel out, and they drove that tank backwards, and they hadn't come out of there. You wouldn't believe it, would you? See, another thing about it was the Bill's tank had not locked down the air louvers over the engine, the engine louvers. They weren't locked down, so when that went up, they all shot forward. I think you can see it on that you could see it. You see that they all shot forward because they lifted up from the back and they all shot forward. They weren't knocked down. That was the driver's fault. Really, they should have been locked down. But if he'd had a stretcher on there was no way he was going to get out. He'd done the best thing, I think, and the only thing he could do.
And was he made a prisoner of war?
Yeah, it was him, Jimmy King. Oh, yeah. Jimmy King was his operator. He was his gunner.
It doesn't matter if you
don't. Yeah, anyway, they were made prisoners of war. And his driver, you see, down the front, they, I reckon, tried to get out and escape and they shot him.